It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Researchers at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, they study the diets of black bears and explore a potential connection. When bears eat people food, does it affect their reproduction and survival rates of cubs? We discussed that with the founder of the North American Bear Center. And you can call in with a question, share your comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Lynn Rogers is also founder and principal biologist of the Wildlife Research Institute. Both the center and the institute are in Ely, Minnesota. Lynn, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, in early February, sightings of black bears out in your area, southern and then central Minnesota, they were reported to the North American Bear Center. And then Wisconsin researchers also have found bears out of hibernation. How unusual is this to see bears leaving their dens in early February?
That's really unusual, yes. And but up here where I am in northeastern Minnesota, there haven't been any reports like that. And I think it's because different populations are adapted to their area. And around here, bears don't respond to warm weather or lack of snow in the middle of winter, because there's just no food to be had. And if a bear gets up and walks around, it's just wasting energy and gaining nothing. But down in the, I'm in the transition area between temperate forest and boreal forest. Down south is temperate forest, where there are winter possibilities of food. And so some bear, they're more flexible. They're willing to get up and look.
Check out what might be around them. Is climate change affecting bears?
I don't know because there have been other winters where we lost a lot of snow in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And for the sightings, when you have warm weather, snow is melting, rain is falling, and water can wash them out of their dens.
You are known for working alongside awake wild black bears, and other researchers collar and study bears while they're still hibernating. What more can be learned from spending time with active black bears rather than monitoring them from afar?
That's how I started my study back in 1969, putting radio collars on them, monitoring them mostly from an airplane. But then after a while, I realized, how much do I really know? I'm not spending time with them. And I saw the benefits of using Jane Goodall's trust-based research methods. And so as I got to know bears better, I found they're not ferocious animals I had grown up thinking, that as they became accustomed to me, they weren't attracted to me, they just ignored me. And that made the best research of anything possible, because before that, there was no way to learn the meanings of their vocalizations, how to read their body language, exactly how they used habitat, and how we could manage habitat for the benefit of bears, how we could do ecosystem management rather than just economic management of forests. And so when I started walking with bears, that's when I really started learning.
Lynn Rogers with us as we talk about black bears in the Midwest. Lynn leads the North American Bear Center in Minnesota. You can join in. Questions and comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. You mentioned Jane Goodall working with chimpanzees, and you've applied that trust-based research methods in your studies of black bears over the decades. How have you come to feel physically safe in close proximity to bears? I mean, I see you feeding them hazelnuts out of your cupped hands.
Well, it's just they're not the dangerous animals I once thought. They're one of the animals that is willing to build trust. And the problem that the biggest problem they have, and what the Department of Natural Resources here asked me to do when I first came to Minnesota in 1969, is to educate about them. And so I had come from Michigan and learned a bit about them in two summers of working with them. And that's why they brought me here as a grad student to design a study in Minnesota. And when I asked the DNR, how can I make this study most beneficial to management? They said the biggest problem we have is the public fears bears so much that we cannot manage them. Mm. All people want to do is have bounties on them, kill bears as many as they can so they feel safer with their families and property. And they said, we want you to change attitudes, create and pass legislation elevating them to big game status, and write new hunting regulations for the state. And I think I didn't know how I could do that as a beginning grad student, but I got joined by people, key people that could help, and we did it. And then when I learned anybody that studies an animal whose welfare depends on public attitude has a responsibility to educate the public.
Well,
Lynn,
let's take a call. Lisa is joining us from Milwaukee. Lisa, what is your question?
Good morning. I was just wondering, we have a lot of fairy tales, well, a few fairy tales, of bears smelling our cooking and wanting to come to in our houses and, you know what I mean, investigate. How is it that we thought that bears only liked berries and vegetables, if that's any truth into those fairy tales and things?
Lisa, thank you. Lynn, what is the truth or not truth in fairy tales?
Yeah, it's, well, as she was saying about what they like to eat, and their favorites, actually, for the last quite a few years, I've been doing research in and around a community that had a question just like hers way back in 1961. And they were ahead of science. They realized that bear problems are not caused by habituation, which just means bears getting accustomed to people, and by food conditioning. It's because of hunger, and they prefer the wild foods. But when those aren't available, that's when they come around houses and bird feed and garbage or whatever, come in houses if they can, some, if they're desperate. But in this community, they started diversionary feeding, of all things.
What is diversionary feeding?
That's putting, since they realized that it was hunger that made problems, if bears were hungry, instead of having the bears going house to house, being shot as nuisances, looking for garbage and bird seed in years of berry crop failures, they had places where the bears could expect food.
Mm.
So instead, they went there and stayed out of trouble.
And knew where they could expect food that was away from other people and their own food. I'm going to just pause here with wildlife biologist Lynn Rogers, who's followed the lives of more than 500 black bears in northeast Minnesota, founded the North American Bear Center and the Wildlife Research Institute. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts along the way. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The warm winter may be arousing black bears earlier from hibernation in Wisconsin, complicating the work of researchers who are studying their reproduction and diet. We explore bear behavior, and thanks to Jay for suggesting more conversations about wildlife during one of our recent caller-only programs. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. Share comments. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lynn Rogers is a longtime wildlife biologist, founder of the North American Bear Center and the Wildlife Research Institute. Lynn, in January, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources asked residents to report black bear den locations that they had uncovered. And for researchers, what is valuable about knowing where bears are hibernating?
Because then they can go there, tranquilize them, put radio collars on them, and follow their lives.
Is that the best thing for bears and for furthering research?
However we can learn about them is good, because the more we know, the better the welfare of bears. And so it's a whole different story than most people think, is what allowed me to do the kind of research I did do. And in fact, when I came to this neighborhood where they had been doing diversionary feeding, the people also got closer and closer to bears, you touching them, stroking them, and they'd come and they eat, then they go back in the woods, and when there's food available, be eating that. So when I came to this neighborhood to study bears, I didn't even have to use tranquilizers to put radio collars on them.
Mm. What do you think is like a kinder, gentler way of doing research on bears?
Well, I like what I do. I don't tranquilize them because that risks their lives. Sometimes you get into a vein or an artery and it goes to their brain and just kills them. Mm-hmm. So I what I've done all my life, all my research, is just trying to find kinder and gentler methods. All like it used to be, I saw people dart bears up in trees, and some of them would tumble to their death. Mm. So I said, I think I know a kinder, gentler way to do it. And so I'd put a big coil of rope on my shoulder. I'd have a long stick attached to my belt, and I'd have a syringe and tranquilizer. I'd climb up the tree. And contrary to what most people would think, you know, the bear would defend itself up in the tree. They'd climb higher and higher till they couldn't go any higher. They'd be clinging to the topmost branch, facing up. I'd have about a 10-foot stick. I didn't want to make it panic. Mm. And I would gently stick the needle in the back thigh. And when I saw any sign of the tranquilizer taking effect, I'd climb up, tie the rope around the bear's leg, wrap it around a branch a couple times for friction, and gently lower the bear to the ground. And just if you can get over fear, you can see a lot of ways. Mm. And you mentioned in dens, One of the areas least studied is what bears do in dens, because when people tried to be at the entrance of a den watching, what happened was den abandonments and other observer effects. They learned nothing. And then finally, when webcams came out, we could use those as den cams. And with the internet and using Jane Goodall's trust-based research methods, which is building trust and being ignored, all of a sudden the world was learning along with me. People in 132 countries were watching local bears and dens.
You could have a live stream of what is happening, the play-by-play in the dens. Yeah.
Yeah. Giving birth, hearing the first cries, seeing the mother tenderly caring for the cubs, and it was just amazing the interest that stirred. A bear in a den became the number one search topic on Google in the world twice.
We're talking with Lynn Rogers from the North American Bear Center in Ely, Minnesota, about the lives of black bears and studying them over time. You can join in questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Chad is here in Sheboygan with a question. Chad, go ahead.
Yeah, so my family has grown up and spent a lot of time in northern Wisconsin, and we really deeply care about the environment up there. And I've watched the black bear population recover, it seems like, in and around where my parents live in northern Wisconsin. And my question is basically, what does the population of the black bears tell us about the overall health of the environment in the area?
Thank you, Chad. Lynn.
Tell me the last couple words again.
The overall population, like the black bear population, tell us about the health of the environment in the local area?
The more variety of food they can have, the better. Like when bears showed me reproductive success of oaks, and I saw that we in northeastern Minnesota there were very few oaks, then I made a move to protect the oaks, and in fact the whole state shifted eventually to ecosystem management rather than just timber harvest.
Well, when we encroach on bears' habitat, we build, we turn fields and forests into housing developments, and then we see that they're encroaching on our environment. How problematic is that coexistence?
The crucial thing is how well do people accept bears, and. In this community where I'm studying bears now, most people very much accept bears. They enjoy seeing them. Mm. And if a bear loses fear, they're just happy that they can see it closer. Mm-hmm. But if people fear bears, then just seeing a bear seems like a danger to them, their family, their property, and they want it killed.
What advice do you have for people who find themselves face to face with a black bear in the wild? Well, what advice would you have for someone who finds themselves with a black bear in the wild for the first time?
One key to being comfortable is feeling that you can defend yourself. And I, not to brag, but I was the one that did the first tests with pepper spray on wild bears, and now it's used around the world. And if you carry like a can of Halt, that's 1/6 the potency of the big spray kinds of stuff, pepper spray, and it shoots a stream like a squirt gun rather than a fog that can blow back on you. And just one drop of that in the eye of a bear, and it's out of there. And nobody else wanted to test this, they said, because how do we know it won't make the bear mad and attack? And so I tested it, and I found that they don't go away mad. They just go away.
Lynn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Lynn Rogers is founder and principal biologist of the North American Bear Center and the Wildlife Research Institute. They are both in Ely, Minnesota. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. We explore a push for more video game development firms in the Midwest and a Green Bay company trying to build up a local industry. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about being seen.
As the saying goes, home is where the heart is. But for writer BJ Hollers, it's a little more complicated than that. We can become deeply connected to our physical homes. So moving and moving on can be a process.
While my family and I have cherished our time in Eau Claire, it's time for us to say goodbye. The boxes are packed, the papers are signed. All that's left is to bid you farewell as we embark upon the next chapter of our journey. A journey, I'm pleased to add, that will take us no further than 1.9 miles from our current home. Yet, sentimentalist that I am, any move, even one that lands us in the same zip code, leaves me awash with emotion. Over the past month, while attempting to box up our belongings, I regularly pumped the packing brakes to indulge in various unplanned detours down memory lane, including a writing worksheet I found crumpled in my 7-year-old daughter's room shortly before our scheduled move. She composed several sentences about the move, including, "My house is along the highway. I've been to my new house." But then, in a stunning twist, her declarative statements veered toward the philosophical. Why does the world move so fast? The moment she got home from school, I accosted her. "Where on earth did you come up with that line?" I asked, handing her the paper. "Duh," she said, rolling her eyes, "only from every adult ever." If there's one thing adults do well, it's lamenting the fast passage of time. Unfortunately, we're less adept at finding ways to slow it. Let me be clear. I never wanted to move. Instead, I'd hoped to root myself as deeply to the land as our backyard river birch tree. But my wife had insisted that the children required bedrooms and bathrooms, and eventually, logic won the day. My begrudging agreement came with conditions. I demanded that our new house be within walking distance of our old house. I wanted to avoid all bidding wars, and I didn't want to sell our former house to just anyone. Such stringent conditions, I figured, would buy me a little more time. Instead, the universe conspired on my wife's behalf, rolling out a tailor-made red carpet that made short work of my conditions. One afternoon, the grandparents of a family friend mentioned that they were hoping to downsize. Their home was just the right size and just the right neighborhood, a mere 5,800 steps away from our current home. Within a month, we'd struck a deal. The only bidding war involved me demanding that I pay a little more to make things closer to fair. With 2 out of 3 conditions met, all that remained was finding the perfect buyers for our own home. This being a seller's market, I had the luxury of vetting all interested parties. Following an extensive 37-year process, I found the perfect people. Or rather, they found me. "Wait a minute," I said into the phone. "You mean to tell me that you and Dad would move here?" "Yes," my mother agreed. "There's nothing we want more." After missing one too many of their grandchildren's activities, my parents were anxious to make the 500-mile journey from Indiana to embark upon their own next chapter with us. Now, if this all seems a little too good to be true, it's because it is. I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop. Will the basement flood? Will the roof cave in? Whatever the price, we'll pay it. Because we have found not only the perfect house, but the perfect arrangement too. We lose nothing, and we gain grandparents. Was it Heraclitus or my 7-year-old who said, "The only constant in life is change"? Whomever it was, they were right. While change is scary, it's less so when you know it's coming. And since it's always coming, we ought never to be afraid. When one door closes, another opens. All the better when you've got familiar faces waiting within.
BJ Hollers is a writer, author, and assistant professor of creative writing at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org, on Facebook, and on Instagram. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The global video game market is valued at over $250 billion, according to a report by market research firm Spherical Insights. A new video game developer in Green Bay aims to change where these games come from and source a talent pool from cities around the Midwest instead of drawing from tech hotspots like Silicon Valley. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ben Qualo is founder and CEO of Midwest Games. Ben, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Great to be here.
Your company says it wants to foster game development in underrepresented regions outside of the coastal hubs. Why do you want to do that?
Well, a piece of it is simply the business opportunity in front of us. And a piece of it is I'm from these places. I'm from Wisconsin. I'm from the places that have been overlooked for a long time. And I really resonate with some of the messages and some of the challenges that these creators have in just getting a job or an opportunity in this business.
Why has the Midwest historically been an underrepresented space for game developers?
Well, the funny thing is, historically, it actually hasn't. There used to be a giant video game publisher called Midway. And a lot of folks will remember Midway because it comes from the arcade era. Things like NFL Blitz, NBA Jam, Mortal Kombat. That was all done out of Chicago. And so that incredible company was one of the largest, most successful companies in the industry's history. But sadly, through a number of different issues and challenges, ended up going out of business in 2009 and selling off all of their properties to Warner Brothers. So we lost the tentpole that was the Midwest. And so there is that history, and we want to bring it back.
What has filled the void, if anything?
Nothing has filled the void. That is the challenge, that everything has moved to mainly the West Coast. If we look at the stats from 2020, which was the last great study done by the ESA, we had about 67% of the industry in three states, which are California, Washington, and Texas. And really, if you look at it even deeper, it's about four regions. The Seattle area, Northern California, centered around San Francisco, and Southern California, centered around LA, and then Austin, Texas.
Austin. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
A lot of it is that was where the success was, and a lot of folks went to where the success was. And in that era, because of the technology it took to build, you had to be physically at these locations. It's just now, especially post-COVID, this industry has thrived remotely and in other places, which has opened up the opportunity. And some of the migration patterns that have happened in 2021, 2022, have just shown that a lot of people have moved back to where they're from, or have moved to a more reasonable cost of living location, such as Wisconsin.
Has broadband expansion helped?
Absolutely. I think we're seeing that that's not only helped from the where you can work, but, you know, there's 3.8 billion gamers now. And a lot of that happens because of the expansion globally. And so there's more opportunities. The industry is growing in greater ways. And what I want is the Midwest to have the cut of it and for Wisconsin to be a centerpiece of that in the Midwest.
So turning to your company now, publishing its first game in April, The Lullaby of Life. This is like a colorful puzzle adventure that was developed in Mexico. How does your company decide which games to publish?
Let me tell you, this is one of the most difficult things because it's a creative industry. You know, it's what I like to say is it's head and heart. You have to take a lot of data, a lot of analysis, but at the end of the day, you have to take a bet on what consumers are going to want to play, want to enjoy. And you have to know what the segment is, at least currently, but that can change pretty quickly, especially in games where genre mixing is very, very common. You know, there's not just horror film or comedy film. Like, you know, people will come up with ways to mix and match a lot of these different kinds of genres. So we go through a whole due diligence process to really evaluate the game, evaluate the creators of the game, and then we have to take a bet. And we have to compare it against the costs and the opportunity, and then we have to balance it across a whole slate because we're actually a publisher, and so we look at a number of different games, and we have to try to take bets in different areas of the industry and see which ones pay off, and then a lot of it comes down to the creators. And my bet is on these creators from underserved places, and Mexico is an underserved place in this industry. So, you know, we've signed people from Mexico, from New Mexico, from the Midwest, and my bet is that that talent will be able to come through and break through in this industry.
And it's like such a range. I mean, you've got ninja cheerleaders from space in another game. That seems to be something you're pulling from Cincinnati. It's just amazing how, you know, diverse the creative options are that are out there coming from these creators.
Yeah, and it's only going to get more diverse and representative of the world around us the more we uplift the folks from these places. Different kinds of games, different kinds of opportunities are ahead of us. And yeah, you get a whole range of unique ideas, but what is incredible about Ra Ra Boom, which is the ninja cheerleaders trying to save the world from AI, is that it is a beat 'em up, which is traditionally a male-dominated game genre, that is instead for female protagonists. So we think there's a lot of underserved female players or players that like to play as female characters, which actually is a lot of males that like to play as a female character, that if we serve those audiences, they will be able to really speak their minds and enjoy and see themselves in the games. And we see it even with games like Farming Simulator, you know, being from Wisconsin, like that's, you know, that's actually one of the most popular games in the world. And when you serve these kinds of titles that, you know, a lot of the traditional industry doesn't take seriously, actually the consumers make the decision, and that's where we want to be, is where the consumers want the games that we're putting out.
Ben Qualo is founder of Midwest Games, trying to draw in game developers in Midwestern cities, keep them here as well. Call in with a question. You can share your comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A former lead project manager of games at Netflix seeks to build up the video game development industry here in the Midwest and draw from a talent pool in cities outside of the coasts. We're in conversation with Ben Qualo, CEO of Midwest Games, based in Green Bay. Be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ben, last year, Microsoft completed its nearly $70 billion acquisition of Activision Blizzard. And we talked about this with UW-Stout Computer Science Program Director Seth Barrier about the state of the video game industry.
You know, we've got AAA at the top. We've got indie developers at the bottom. What's in the middle? Your sort of AA, single A developers. They're kind of disappearing. It isn't there anymore. The business model that supports that and manages to, you know, find the budget that's in that range, it just doesn't exist anymore. And I think these mergers are pushing that even further. Companies keep, you know, scooping up other companies into their fold, and the big gets bigger. And oddly enough, I think indies are getting smaller.
Ben, what do you make of that? Is there room for mid-sized game companies in today's market?
Need to grow them in a different way than we have grown them in the past. It's going to come from the indie play space, and it's going to grow, I think, a little bit slower. You know, a lot of pressure is happening on the AAA, or some people are calling it quadruple A space, where you have to immediately hit it out of the park if you have new IP. But what's actually happening in the indie space is that this IP can grow slower, can take time to actually find an audience and not have the pressures that come with being in this larger space. 99% of games are indie games. And so when we talk about the AAA, even the AA space, which is disappearing, there's only about 70 AA games that come out a year now, compared to the 14,000 games coming out every year overall. The AAA space is a minority of the overall, but makes the vast majority of the revenue. So we need to more evenly split that and invest more in the indie space. And I think we're going to find the middle class kind of grow out of the smaller indie space over time.
Okay. How are you working with universities to foster that next generation of game designers and developers?
So we're at the very beginning piece of this, but a lot of this is giving opportunity and also having the hope that you can get into this industry. When I was coming through the universities in Wisconsin, and I went to UW Green Bay, there was no hope or idea that we could actually go up and get into this industry. There's so few companies at that point. Raven was really the only one in Madison. And now we have the hope, the opportunity, and that's going to spark the ability for people to go off, create their game studios, and then work with folks like ourselves, publishers, to bring a game to market and give them a chance. We're also talking with, I was literally talking with a student that is a senior at UW Madison and about a job opportunity and an entry-level job opportunity. And that just didn't exist before. So we're at the very beginnings, but we want to talk to these universities. We want to make sure the programs are set up appropriately with where the industry is at today, so that we can turn this incredible talent pipeline towards this growing industry that can make a giant impact to Wisconsin and the entire Midwest region.
We're discussing the growth of the local video game industry in Wisconsin with Ben Qualo, founder and CEO of Midwest Games. You can join in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Joel is here in Plainfield. Joel, hi.
Hi, my name is Joel. I'm a former teacher of Ben at Portage High School. And I'm calling and I'm wondering what his company is doing on the educational side of things. Are they developing any games that are going to be geared towards schools and students?
That's a great question, and hello, Joel. We are not currently focused on education so much because what we want to do, similar to the path of a game like Minecraft, first make these games entertaining and get the attraction of the consumers. And the thing about that is it opens up the path to education, because, you know, a game like Minecraft has now become such an incredible educational tool. If you go the other way, it's much more difficult to get in. You know, there aren't quite the games like when I was growing up, you know, Math Blaster and some of the, you know, games that you played that were, you know, also entertaining. You really need to attach onto something. So games like Fortnite and these larger ones have large opportunities to educate. They just have to have the motivation. And so we will gain that over time with some of our successes and be able to turn that into educational tools. Even in a game like Assassin's Creed, which was not focused around education, has now been able to been turned into an educational tool for the history of each of these regions that they attach onto within their games.
Joel, thanks for calling in. We're also watching the layoffs in this industry. And, you know, what do the layoffs mean for developers and the games that people love?
We are at a really interesting crossroads in this industry where we are changing to the next era. If you think about the eras of games, there was arcade games, and then we console games, and then suddenly this digital era where most games are bought and consumed digitally. Well, we're about to move into an era of cloud where everything is online. You know, even devices. It doesn't matter what device you're on, you're able to play any kind of game anywhere at any time. And so we're about to move into this new era. And with that comes a lot of change. So a lot of what is happening right now are these companies are looking forward and seeing, oh my goodness, like there's a large change coming. We need to be ready for it. There's also a lot of just normalization post-COVID. There was such a giant boom that happened during COVID that it really created a lot of chaos in the industry and overhiring, companies not really having a strong strategy, really reacting to the moment. So there's that. And then, frankly, like there's a lot of just opportunists happening right now where they're trying to make their bottom line better by cutting people. And I think it's a poor philosophy of it. It's going to hurt them long term because of the lost trust, but they're not getting as much flack right now because everyone else is doing it. So they might have one day, you know, of a lot of negative PR, but it's only one day compared to much longer if it weren't for the fact that there's another company doing a layoff every day, it seems.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for sharing with us and your look at the industry. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Ben Qualo is founder and CEO of Midwest Games that is based in Green Bay. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks to Edward in Milwaukee for suggesting we talk about the lives of young professionals and shares that city leaders could create more opportunities for newcomers to build connections.
I am a young-ish professional who just kind of moved to the Milwaukee area. And I, after looking around, I found some great activities and things to do in the summer. But in the winter, I'm struggling to find some, you know, ways to stay more involved in the community and as it gets a little bit more difficult to get outside.
Call in with a question. Share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Barbara Koldos is president of the Northeast Wisconsin chapter of Asian Corporate and Entrepreneur Leaders and vice president of business development at New North. That's the 18-county regional economic development organization in Northeast Wisconsin. Barbara, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Glad to be here, Kate. Thank you.
Yes, Maria Lara here as well, co-founder of the Latino Professionals Association of Northeast Wisconsin and an adjunct faculty member in the College of Business at Northeast Wisconsin Technical College in Green Bay. Maria, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Barbara, let's start with you. You moved to Wisconsin from Arizona several years ago. Did you find Wisconsin a welcoming place when you arrived?
Welcoming for sure, but needed to perhaps grow a little bit in the Asian culture aspect.
What do you mean by that?
So when I moved here, I joined young professional groups and networking groups and was really trying to find amenities like what's the best Asian grocery store or where can I get my boba drinks? Things that I was used to in Phoenix.
Why did you see a need to start a chapter of Asian corporate and entrepreneur leaders?
Yeah. So we are seeing a growing Asian population in Northeast Wisconsin. Asians make up about 4% of the population here out of 1.3 million people. And coming here, you know, knowing that workforce is a challenge for Northeast Wisconsin. Talent is a challenge, recruitment, retention. And so I thought, there has to be more than just a few of us Asian professionals who are involved in the community or want to be involved in the community. And so I dug in a little bit deeper and found out that, you know, the two larger school districts in our region, Appleton and Green Bay Area Schools, Appleton has 12% of their students that identify as Asian. And Green Bay Area School is the fourth largest school district in the state. You know, 8% of their students identify as AAPI. So there's an opportunity to grow the next generation of Asian American leaders here at home as part of a workforce.
Maria, turning to you, can you tell us about the Latino Professional Association of Northeast Wisconsin and what this group has cultivated?
Absolutely. Thank you. Latino Professionals Association, or LPA, has been around for about 3 years. And similar to what Barbara shared, it's an opportunity for Latino professionals to find one another. I live just outside of Green Bay, and although Green Bay is a fairly small town in comparison to many of the larger cities some of us move from, it's not very easy to meet other professionals who are Latinos, especially if your organization is not very diverse. So Latino Professional Association, or LPA, gives us an opportunity to create a venue where we can come together. We have over 20 industries or career paths represented among our nearly 200 members now.
I wonder, do you see the association as more like a support system, or are there particular problems that your group is able to solve?
This is Maria. For us, absolutely. There's a strong element of camaraderie that we are seeking and that we build at LPA, and that is absolutely a strong benefit that our members experience when they join. However, we are also seeing that many of our members are able to take a lot of the professional development and inspiration from LPA into the workplace. For example, several members of our group participated in helping create a business resource group at their employer, and we're starting to see more of that. So really, the workplace and LPA are helping one another cultivate a higher engagement from our members.
Maria Lara at the Latino Professionals Association of Northeast Wisconsin, Barbara Koldos here at the Northeast Wisconsin Chapter of Asian Corporate and Entrepreneur Leaders as we talk about how communities can attract and retain young professionals. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Now let's hear from Kaylin Winiger, who is Vice President of Investor Engagement at the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. Kaylin, welcome.
Good morning and happy Friday.
Happy Friday. So the Eau Claire Chamber helps organize the young professionals of the Chippewa Valley. Can you tell us about this group?
I absolutely can. I'll start with a personal story because I'm a transplant to the Eau Claire community. I've lived on both the East and West coasts of the United States and a short stint overseas. So it's a little bit ironic and interesting that I chose to make Eau Claire, Wisconsin my home. But part of the reason I've lived here so long, almost 14 years now, is because I personally got involved with young professionals so early on in my career. So this group has been around for 20 plus years with our chamber. It invites anyone who's 21 years of age to 40 years of age to join and network with other professionals in the area. That could be students who are exploring their career all the way through business owners and entrepreneurs. So it's a pretty incredible and very vibrant 350 young professionals in our area.
And you also have a concierge program that connects established residents with people who are considering moving to Eau Claire and the area. Why make these connections?
Yeah, again, a little bit of a personal story here. So the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce brought on a full-time workforce role because we saw a need for collaborating with other organizations to really foster the growth that was already happening here in Eau Claire, whether it was housing or construction, but also that career growth. So we wanted to bring really great professionals from not only our universities, but for some surrounding cities and states. So with my role, we started to build out some really robust programming, starting with young professionals and then bringing on this Explore Eau Claire concierge program. At its core, we use the phrase, you sell your company, we'll sell the community. And so it's meant to be a partnership with area employers that are either in the candidate phase or the onboarding phase of bringing new professionals to the area. What I love about this program is that it is a really nice snapshot of our community, but a realistic one as well. We are not going to shy away from telling you what maybe some things our community is lacking. I know one of the other folks on this call mentioned that you may not have your local barbershop or your favorite grocery store readily available in our community. And so then our job is to partner those folks or mentor those folks who do come to our community seeking those things. Where is the next closest thing? Or is it something that we can foster with an entrepreneur or redevelopment or bring a new business to the area?
It makes me think, Barbara, about your move from Phoenix and just the transparency in the amenities that are available in a new community. How important is that?
Definitely an important piece of when moving to a new community. You know, it's no different than anyone coming here and wanting to find, you know, their favorite restaurant, their favorite bar, their favorite grocery store. And being an Asian American, it's a little bit different because, you know, while there is an Asian aisle at my local grocery store, there are just some certain spices and you know, certain noodles that perhaps they don't carry. So absolutely important to have, you know, what makes someone feel at home.
That is Barbara Koldos, heads up business development at New North in the northeast part of the state. Maria Lara is here, co-founder of Latino Professionals Association of Northeast Wisconsin. And Kaylin Winiger leads investor engagement at Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. As we talk about economic development and explore how to attract and retain young professionals, call in with a question, add comments, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin struggles to attract and retain a highly educated workforce of young adults, and that's according to a report last year by Forward Analytics that looked at in-migration into the state. We examine efforts by economic developers to help young professionals make connections and get rooted here. Call in with a question. You can share thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kaylin Winiger is with the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. Barbara Koldos leads the Northeast Wisconsin chapter of Asian Corporate and Entrepreneur Leaders. And Maria Lara is with the Latino Professionals Association of Northeast Wisconsin. Maria, the Census Bureau estimates 17% of people in Green Bay identify as Hispanic or Latino. Is the Green Bay area welcoming to Latinos?
I would say that within the Latino community, once you locate it after moving to the Green Bay area, it is extremely welcoming. The larger Green Bay community, generally speaking, is welcoming. However, as you move into a community and start to settle in, certainly there's layers of being welcoming that are required. The first step, of course, is letting people know that you're happy that they're here. But that second and third layer really makes a difference in terms of whether or not that welcoming environment permeates their more long-term stay. And that can be done by a number of things. For example, Barbara has talked about the importance of having those amenities that allow people to enjoy the cuisine that they do in other places. But it also involves ensuring that we are, as a community, continuing to evolve, allowing people who move to Green Bay or other locations to leave their mark, if you will, to have an influence and in future changes, instead of requiring them to conform to whatever the environment might be.
Hmm. Barbara, there are other young professional groups in your area. How important is having a group specifically for Asian professionals?
Yeah. I've had the opportunity to participate in the young professional groups in our area as well. So grateful for that opportunity. I think the reasoning to build a community for Asian American professionals is, I liken it to whenever a Packer fan travels during a Packer game, and let's say they're out of town, and we know wherever in the country and perhaps in the world, there's a Packer bar. And so during a Packer game, a Packer fan would typically normally go to the Packer bar or locate the Packer bar wherever they're traveling. So it's similar to that, where you're finding other individuals who are similar in what it is that you are interested in, and building together. So, you know, I've had the opportunity to be a part of young professional groups in the area, and I bring, or I'm hoping to bring that opportunity to others here who perhaps have not had the opportunity to participate in young professional groups outside of their workplace and are looking to grow in those aspects.
Kaylin, you know, high school grads, they often leave their hometowns for college. How can communities maintain connections with students so they return after graduating from college?
Yeah, one of the ways that we've really tried to work with area employers is to foster internship opportunities and career exploration, particularly with our higher ed institutions. But we go as young as middle school with our local schools now, just to showcase the unique and really great careers that our employers offer in the area. I just want to point out that the other two that you spoke to just really mentioned that, like, belonging is so incredibly important no matter where you want to move. And so if we continue to showcase the things that do exist in our community, we want to be a part of that in any way, shape, or form. I have a personal belief that if folks want to go out and explore the world or even the United States, please go and do it. Go find those really great, wonderful, innovative ideas and bring them back to our communities to be closer to families and be a part of a community that does foster belonging and a place where it's easy to get involved as well and make your mark on a community. That's something that I experienced here and love to share with folks.
But how do you address a potential image or perception that a community may be insular or exclusionary?
Yeah, well, I guess I'll point to what we've done with Explore Eau Claire and even with young professionals. We try really hard to paint a realistic picture of our community as well. We know we don't offer everything. We know that there are challenges here in our community. We won't shy away from them. In particular, we're facing some challenges with some organizations that are coming in hoping to bring some refugees to the area, and we're experiencing some backlash to that. And just helping to put out, you know, truthful, honest information, and also showcase where there are groups that are willing to help and bring those folks to the area and provide great jobs, and showcase that having families here is a really safe place to grow and.
We're talking about attracting and retaining young professionals. We have Kaylin Winiger there at the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce, Barbara Koldos at the Northeast Wisconsin Chapter of Asian Corporate and Entrepreneur Leaders. Maria Lara is here at the Latino Professionals Association of Northeast Wisconsin. Maria, in 2020, the city of Green Bay declared racism a public health crisis. How much of a deterrent are racist attitudes to attracting new workers and residents and families?
Creating an environment that seems unwelcoming to any group really is a quick way of losing a lot of talent. And there are different ways that people can display, whether it's racism or a bias. It could be very, very subtle. Many people have experienced, of course, extreme racism. However, there are subtle remarks that people can make that denote that perhaps a group that is different, if you will, is not welcome. And again, as soon as people have alternatives, they're going to seek out other communities, perhaps other states, that will enjoy whatever it is they have to offer. So it's a quick way to lose talent within a city, within an organization, when you create an environment that people are unwelcome and that you're inflexible and unwilling to adapt and allow them to have high engagement that allows them to start to reflect themselves in that organization or city. It's important, of course, as I mentioned, to welcome people, but it's equally important with time to allow people to make a contribution of their own.
Barbara, what are ways that local governments and community organizations can foster diversity and inclusion?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I think for me, I feel like Northeast Wisconsin is very open and willing to learn and understand. And I think wherever you go in the world, you know, there's always opportunity for to be better. There's always opportunities to be better. I think what I would encourage local governments is to be open and allowing the abundance mindset, that there's enough for everyone out there, and to be open to allowing others to perhaps try something different. That may not be what we've always used to doing. You know, what's that definition of insanity is continuing to doing the same thing. And so that's what I would encourage others, is just be open, have an open mindset.
An open mindset. What might be an example of an abundance mindset?
Yeah. So I have been asked, you know, in my role, I do business attraction and I try to bring companies here to our region. And I have been asked, you know, it's about business, and why exclude? Why are you creating Asian Corporate Entrepreneur Leader Chapter? It feels very exclusionary, and my response to them is, we're not exclusionary. Of course, we're inclusive. We're trying to be inclusive. Anyone is welcome to join. In fact, 20% of the national membership are non-Asians, but really, it's not similar. It's not dissimilar to anyone who has multiple children, Kate. Hmm. So, you know, someone who has two children, you know, maybe you love both children the same, but maybe one just needs a little bit more support than the other.
Let's pause
at this moment.
Let's pause right there. Barbara Koldos, Maria Lara is here, Kaylin Winiger. You can call in 800-642-1234 to be part of the discussion. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. California and Texas attract more Gen Z movers than any other state. That's a new analysis of census data by real estate firm Zillow. Thanks to Edward in Milwaukee, who suggests we discuss how Wisconsin cities can better attract and retain young professionals. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Three economic development leaders are with us. We have Barbara Koldos at New North in the northeast part of the state, Maria Lara at Latino Professionals Association of Northeast Wisconsin, and Kaylin Winiger is at the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. Kaylin, thinking about the partnerships you have with area employers, what do employers misunderstand about attracting new talent?
That's a really good question. I think that one of the things that's really hard is obviously rate of pay, and then also just how integral the community connection is with folks who want to move to the area. They're really great at onboarding within workplace culture, but not necessarily outside of it. And I don't know that I'm necessarily saying that that's their role either, but that's where we saw a unique opportunity to partner with employers to say, if you do want your individual hard-fought talent to stay in the area, how do we help foster that? So it's that outside touch point to another organization or a young professionals group, or perhaps getting involved in your local chamber of commerce or even volunteering at your local nonprofit that might keep that professional in the area because they're experiencing more with their community. We also see this with our higher education students. On-campus life in our area is incredible, but we found another opportunity in partnering with both Chippewa Valley Technical College and University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and Stout to make sure that those students are experiencing events, initiatives that are going on in our community that aren't necessarily just music festivals. It could be volunteering with Feed My People or Meals on Wheels, or how do you get involved with young professionals and go to a professional education event, a networking and after hours, or that community involvement and giving back. Those are absolutely crucial for feeling like you belong in a community and not just work in a community and therefore start thinking about where else you might want to move.
I think what I hear from you, too, is that it's not just the rate of pay that is the be-all, end-all here. It's really about creating that work-life balance and knowing what else is around that job and to ensure that you have a whole life.
Absolutely. We actually got together with some great collaborative partners back in 2018. Our surrounding cities, even from some rural communities, our Visit Eau Claire, to put up a website called Think Eau Claire, which is a fantastic snapshot of our communities. We've got a couple of videos which showcase both summer activities and involvement in the area and also winter, because that was one of the largest questions we would get about moving to the Midwest. So how do you experience winter if, one, you're not used to it, or if you are used to it and don't want to be outside all the time? So we received a grant through Winter Mission, which actually came out of Canada, to showcase just how vibrant a community can be in the winter, whether you want to spend it indoors or outdoors. And through that, just naturally, we actually found out that we had more activities to be involved in the winter than we did in our summer months here in Eau Claire, which was pretty intriguing. being able to show those snapshots has been really, really useful to showcase our arts, our sports scene, outdoor activities, winter and summer. We want to capitalize on those really natural things that are already growing here and let people know that they can be involved in them. As we've started to meet with some of these professionals who choose to come to Eau Claire and likely want to stay and help build that, I've actually been able to talk to quite a few folks and even families that are moving to say, we have a really great community that fosters socioeconomic events as well. So it's pretty cost effective or even free to be involved in things, which makes a huge difference in our area.
Barbara, your chapter of the Asian Corporate and Entrepreneur Leaders, it covers 18 counties in the region. How different do you think are the challenges in attracting and retaining people in urban areas versus rural communities?
Yeah, so our chapter covers a pretty large area. We wanted to mirror it to the regions in the state. And so absolutely, the accessibility of folks from our more rural areas to our more urban area and urban cores. But I think if you build something, whether it's online or in person, there's opportunities to engage. And so I think that's that's what we see people wanting, whether they are urban or located in a rural area, right? Like mm-hmm. They can be engaged and join and be a part of something as part of their community, no matter where they live.
I wonder, Maria, too, how much of a factor is housing, cost of housing, the ability to find quality housing near like a vibrant core area of both in reach of your work and with things to do?
Certainly, housing has been reported by not just Latino professionals, but many young professionals as being an issue. I do know that someone shared with me last night, because we had a fantastic meeting with our members, that's at least a couple employers that they know of are starting to offer some home purchase assistance as a benefit to their employees. So certainly an opportunity for an employer to distinguish themselves as a employer of choice is to provide some sort of assistance, whether it be information or ideally actual financial support to someone who is moving to the area, either to buy a home or to secure a rental property.
Kaylin, do you see those barriers in housing as well where you are in the Eau Claire area?
Yeah, it's actually one of the challenges that we're experiencing as being one of the largest growing areas in the state is lack of housing and then cost of housing. So we've actually seen quite a few projects growing in the area, which is part of our growth in new net construction here in Eau Claire County. But we are seeing new apartment buildings of a variety of housing opportunities, whether it's one or two bedroom apartments or townhomes being developed right now, and they're being leased just as quickly as they're being built, which is pretty incredible. We're seeing some growth come from the Twin Cities area for folks who have chosen to go to either remote work or want a different pace of lifestyle, work-life balance, moving to the Eau Claire region. And so we're trying to help foster getting those folks into those homes and providing options. A few years ago, that certainly wasn't something we were necessarily focusing on. And so now we've got some folks and some housing initiatives to make sure that housing remains affordable for those who want to relocate or move into some of the higher costing homes that exist in the area. Or if you're looking to build, where are there land opportunities or loan opportunities? I can't speak to that specifically, but I do know that there are some housing initiatives and even some internal chamber staff here who are involved in those initiatives to make sure that we're looking at it as a sustainable model to make sure that we're not going to, you know, crash in a couple of years because we're not thinking about all the pieces that are necessary to make a vibrant community.
But you think that remote work and broadband expansion has become a very much a new area for economic developers to really figure out, you know, we have a much broader pool of people who might really be able to work from our location, for instance.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's something that we talk about with our employers fairly regularly. You know, coming from both coasts, we know that the Midwest is a little bit slower to adopt, you know, in some of those areas. But because we you know, have so many great connections, we can start to talk to employers about why it's important to offer those opportunities. Not only are you getting the best possible talent for roles, you're also increasing your productivity. And it's no stranger to the fact that there's just not enough bodies to fill all the roles that currently exist in this world. We're not experiencing a workforce challenge only here in Wisconsin. It's everywhere. And so you really do need to adapt and change that thinking of how productivity happens in the workplace.
We're talking about attracting and retaining young professionals, and we have Kaylin Winiger at the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. Maria Lara is at the Latino Professionals Association of Northeast Wisconsin, and Barbara Koldos at the Northeast Wisconsin Chapter of Asian Corporate and Entrepreneur Leaders. I'm wondering, Barbara, you know, how can Wisconsin state government help communities attract and retain young professionals? What more could state agencies do here?
Yeah, I think that we are, state agencies are doing a great job in talking about the amenities that we have here, trying to attract the boomerangs, those folks who Kaylin had mentioned earlier, those who, you know, move away. That's right, move away and then come back. I think we're doing a great job there. Again, I think it's the openness of looking at it as how do we build prosperity for all? And for all meaning that, you know, wherever folks are coming from, wherever their lens is, making sure that we're reaching those individuals however we need to. So if it is building a Latino Professionals of Northeast Wisconsin, if it's building a Asian Corporate and Entrepreneur Leaders Group, if it's building a We All Rise African Heritage, you know, helping and supporting those organizations because they're reaching out to others whom perhaps aren't being reached in a traditional way.
Maria, what are your thoughts there on the integration of multiple groups all working toward a similar goal?
I agree with what Barbara just shared. You know, recently there was an event here in Green Bay to discuss the growth of an apprentice program. And apprentice programs have been around for a very long time. But most recently, there was an additional investment made. And it was observed that very few minorities were involved in the current apprentice program, which is very disappointing, of course, because diverse communities here in Green Bay have been around for forever, and they're only growing. And I think the challenge and opportunity for city government, state government, and employers is to leverage some of these organizations that Barbara mentioned to reach those diverse communities, because the traditional methods simply don't normally work. They might work for a small percentage of the diverse community, but it's really organizations like Casa Alba Melanie, We All Rise, CAMSA, that are reaching the diverse communities, for example, in Green Bay, and leveraging those groups, including LPA, to reach the diverse students is essential. One of the things that our members mentioned in our meeting last night, because I posed this question to them, many of them are transplants, but some of them also have been born and raised here. And in addition to wanting to celebrate their cultures at work and outside of work, they want to see an investment in the young people, in the education system. And there's a lot of opportunity there, especially in Green Bay. There's a lot of disparities, unfortunately, in Green Bay in terms of education that mirror the state and even the country. And I think these organizations, LPA, Casa Alba, We All Rise, CAMSA, are really key, and ASA are really key to really be able to reach some of these students. We recently had in Green Bay a summit, a leadership summit that was put together by a number of individuals, and students had an opportunity to interact and network with young professionals and then experienced professionals that are similar to them in terms of culture or race. And those summits have been extremely significant to the students. And not only are the students being inspired by these professionals, but I've participated, and I can tell you that for me, it's been equally as inspirational to spend time with young Latina and Latino students who have a different perspective perhaps than I do. And
you know, be able to listen.
To grow for all of us.
Yeah. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
That is Barbara Koldus, president of the Northeast Wisconsin chapter of Asian Corporate and Entrepreneur Leaders, vice president of business development at Newer North. Kaylin Winiger is vice president of investor engagement at Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. And Maria Lara, co-founder of Latino Professionals Association of Northeast Wisconsin. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about new efforts to attract and retain younger workers with Wisconsin's head of economic development. Call in with a question. Share thoughts. 800-642-1234. Missy Hughes is Secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Secretary Hughes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. Your agency this month launched Look Forward Wisconsin. What are the goals of this initiative?
So Look Forward Wisconsin is our new talent attraction website, which is part of a multi-pronged effort to make sure that as folks around the country are considering opportunities in different states and different regions, they're thinking about Wisconsin, they know about the opportunities here, and they come join us in our wonderful communities.
You say it's multi-pronged. What are some other aspects of this push?
Well, I really appreciated that in the earlier segment, you were talking to some of our partners around the state. So as we look at talent attraction, first and foremost, if you can't retain people, you can't attract people. So it's critical that the state and our local partners are all thinking about how do we make our communities places where people want to stay and then they want to come to. So we're thinking about things like housing. You mentioned broadband. We're thinking about childcare and transportation. All of these things that Wisconsinites need to prosper means that they're going to stay here. We're going to have great communities, and that will attract people to Wisconsin.
Well, you have to knit all of these things together that can be in very different aspects of quality of life. So how will this program then go about recruiting people or bringing all of those issues together?
Well, if someone is interested in moving to Wisconsin, they can come to our website, lookforwardwisconsin.com, and first they can see the diversity that Wisconsin has to offer, whether it's arts and culture or urban or rural or outdoor recreation. You'll see when you come to the website an immediate diversity of opportunities and what you can be thinking about doing. You'll also see the opportunity to understand our different regions and, you know, whether you want to live in the Eau Claire area or you have a job opportunity in the Green Bay area, you'll be able to go and really deep dive and explore into those regions. And then the most exciting thing is we have a big red button that says if you want to make a connection, you can click on that, you can enter your information, and we have ambassadors all around the state that will be reaching out to you to really answer your specific questions and help you kind of explore your different ideas and what you're looking for.
How is the state finding those community ambassadors to work with people who are thinking about moving to Wisconsin?
Well, we have, you know, as you spoke with earlier today, this morning, we have a number of partners that are all around the state who are really interested in this idea of how can we get people and more people to Wisconsin. Our businesses are asking for it all the time, and they're asking those economic development professionals. So we have been able to find ambassadors, you know, through our partners and through other folks that have expressed interest to us in helping with these issues.
Is your agency actively like engaging or consulting young professionals as you put out these different tools?
Yeah, we've done a whole lot of research. We don't have unlimited resources in this effort. And so we want to make sure that we're as targeted as we can be. So we've done research, especially with the Generation Z, Gen Z, you know, which is that age 30 to 35 or so, and ask them, what are you interested in? And, you know, there's things that you expect, like affordable housing, safe neighborhoods, good education, but there's also things like access to outdoor activities or public education. And so we want to make sure that we're also highlighting those things that our research shows people are really interested in.
So when you talk with employers, what are their needs? What industries have the greatest need for this in-migration of potential workers?
Oh, I wish I could pick an industry. You know, we just have a real need to bring more folks here. We have plenty of jobs, whether it's in manufacturing or our service industry. Certainly the healthcare industry is looking for additional help. And, you know, our policemen, our firemen. So it's very broad. One place that we are specifically targeting are veterans. You know, Wisconsin has some of the best benefits in the country when it comes to GI benefits, folks who have left the service and are now looking for their next opportunities. So we're working directly with the Department of Veteran Affairs and the Department of Military Affairs to target veterans who've expressed an interest in Wisconsin. And we're going to them and we're saying, let's talk more about the opportunities and the companies that you might work for.
We're talking about Wisconsin's efforts to attract and retain new workers. Missy Hughes is with us, Secretary of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Call in with a question. You can share comments at 800-642-1234. Of course, the Look Forward Wisconsin isn't the first initiative that has that Wisconsin has undertaken to attract and retain, you know, young people, younger workers. But, you know, how will you gauge success in an initiative like this? What is successful?
Well, it is really hard to gauge success because, you know, someone might look at the website and we never know whether or not they move to Wisconsin. That's why this piece about making that connection, giving them the opportunity to ask for more information will really give us a chance to know, okay, did this person follow our effort to make a connection with them and to get them more information? We've used a model that's been used around the country in a number of different states that have seen success with this. They've seen success with following these leads and creating these ambassadors. We don't need to be inventing the wheel. Lots of folks are trying to attract, but we're just really trying to tell people the special things about Wisconsin and make sure they know about the opportunities here.
I want to land on political climate in our last moments together. How big of a factor are things like reproductive rights and diversity, equity, and inclusion in attracting people to Wisconsin?
You know, certainly that's something that the next generation and the generation of folks moving around are thinking about. But I think in Wisconsin, we also have such an opportunity to offer really great careers, a low cost of living. There's political divisiveness and uncertainty everywhere. And I think Wisconsin offers a real opportunity to find a great community to live in, get a great job, and be able to raise your family or continue your career in ways that you want to.
So you don't feel like that would hamper growth in any way?
You know, I think that it always is something that where it's an obstacle that we need to kind of clear out of the way and make sure that people aren't always seeing that. And that's why we're really trying to get efforts out to make sure that folks know about the opportunities and the fun stuff that's happening in Wisconsin. We have Top Chef coming here and filming. You know, we're going to see that coming in the next few months. People are going to see a totally different story about Wisconsin. The NFL draft is going to provide people opportunities to think about something completely different than politics.
Secretary Hughes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Missy Hughes, Secretary and CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.